Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Football Fan Show. And joined as always by Carlos, the legend, the man. It's good to be with you. You all right?
Very good to be with you too, Malcolm. How are you?
Good, good, good. It's fantastic to be on. Look, football has been fantastic. It's been fantastic. Thrills and spills, international break. It's November. So November is the season not to be cheery if you're a football manager. It's definitely not a season to be merry because November, especially in the UK anyway, is notoriously the highest amount, apart from obviously in the summer, of manager sackings, because obviously they've had a fair stint, a third of the season, nearly a third of the season. And it's international break, 2 weeks off. So it's a good time for the board to make that decision if someone's not performing and if they are, you know, frustrated with the situation, to find someone new and have a bit of space to do it in. So look, it's happened. So I think we should talk about manager sackings. So one that has been on the cards for a long time, and one of the first ones really to happen as soon as the new people came. We've talked a little bit about it already. Mr. Steve Bruce. Look, it was inevitable, right? There was no way he was not going to get sacked as soon as the new people came in.
Yes, I think everyone could see that one coming. I would like to add my opinion as well on why coaches are sacked mainly in November. Everything that you said is true, but also I think we have to take into account that in December, you have so many matches. There's such a run of games. I think eight matches are going to be played in December, that it's too risky to not make the change before, because if you make it too late, then those are matches and points you might lose. So I think teams want to prepare as well for what's coming up in December, apart from obviously the international break, and as you said, they've had a few months to have a look at how the team is performing. All of these factors, I think, are taken into account. And
it's true.
I think with Steve Bruce, probably not many of those factors were considered by the owners, because I think they just wanted someone who, I was going to say, has a better or bigger, not better, but bigger name. But really, the man they've gone for hasn't really got a bigger name. But he's young, he's up and coming, he's a prospect, he's English. A lot of foreign coaches were mentioned for Newcastle. But I just think that Bruce hasn't got the image that probably the new owners want for the team. Howe is young, he's bright, he's exciting. He did very well for Bournemouth. And Bruce is associated with old school football.
Yeah.
So I guess that's really the reason why, quite apart from the fact that Newcastle are joint bottom, obviously. Newcastle usually start the season badly and then do enough to survive. And I'm pretty sure that they'll do the same this season, especially because in January, players will arrive and they'll be stronger than they are at present.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I'll just add to that, I think as well, Bruce, for the most part of his managerial career, I know he has operated in the Premiership before, but for the most part, his career has been in the Championship and lower. So, that, you know, and that's obviously associated with, as you said, the kind of old school. If you look at probably at least 50% of the Championship managers, they are all, you know, in their advanced years and have been around for quite some time. Obviously, we've got the young, fresh people, like the one at Fulham.
Yes, yeah, Marcus Silva and Bournemouth doing very, very well. He arrived in the UK with a fantastic record when he went to Hull City.
Yeah,
the fact was that Hull were a lost cause. There was nothing really anyone could do to save them, and he didn't do badly. He didn't do badly there, to be honest. Then he went to Everton.
Everton was the one.
But I think managers will always fail at one or two clubs. You don't get a manager who is always successful. And Silva had a very good and long run of success, and then things didn't go that well at Everton. I wouldn't say he failed, but I just think he wasn't as successful as was hoped for. So he was out, and now I think he's going to show everyone what he can do. He's already doing that.
Yeah, and your former manager, Parker's at Bournemouth. So, and no surprises, the two young, fresh, I suppose Silva is experienced, but Parker's relatively inexperienced. They're first and second and fighting to come up. So it's going to be interesting, both of them, if they both come up, which obviously looks like there's a separation now between the two of you teams, Bournemouth and Fulham and the rest. If you both come up, how they do. And then in their second stint back in the Premier League. So that'll be interesting to see. But going back to Newcastle, I've got the table up, as you said. They are down at the bottom. And no surprises, the Norwich City manager got sacked as well. But look at their situation. 11 games in, that's obviously 38-game season. We know Eddie Howe's taken over. We know what he's about. He's been in the Premiership before, and he did okay. He did all right, not too bad. Kept his team up, which was fine, and obviously they went down. But is he really the man, first of all, to keep them up? I know you talked about it, that Newcastle start to find their rhythm. But, they do have some fight, and we've seen it even on the weekend. But do you honestly think that they're pretty much safe and there'll be teams above them that will go down, like Watford or Burnley?
I don't think Burnley will go down. I don't think Newcastle will go down. So that opens things up, doesn't it? Norwich probably will do so. Watch out for Brentford. I did say at the beginning of the season they would go down. They started very well, but now they've lost four consecutive matches. I remember talking to our friend Vartan before they lost four consecutive matches. And I said, Brentford can go on a 10-match losing streak.
Yeah.
And, it might not happen, but I think now they're beginning to realise how rough and how tough it is to live in the Premier League. So don't count them out for relegation. And one funny thing about, Eddie Howe won't find this funny, but what I think might actually happen at Newcastle is that if they survive under Eddie Howe, I think at the end of the season, he could be out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I think they'll sack him. You see, I don't think that they will see him as the big name, the star manager who will take Newcastle to greater heights.
Hmm.
If a big name, probably foreign manager, becomes available, I have no doubt that they will make a move and they'll just give Eddie Howe a handsome paycheck and say goodbye.
Oh, yeah. Well, money's no object for these guys. They've got $200 billion of plus dollars in the bank, so pounds, whatever it is. But they've got more money than any other club anyway. That's the bottom line. This is small money for them, whatever they're paying Eddie Howe. And Eddie Howe's not got a massive contract. It's not got a five-year contract. It's got a two-year contract. So they're definitely paid off. And I was going to ask you that as well, because I think that he is just a stepping stone. He's the man to keep them up. And that's their objective, right? They got Graham Jones there at the moment. He's done a great job under the circumstances. But Eddie Howe's there. He's coming in. But once they are safe, which, like you said, chances of them being safe are pretty high, then, of course, they were looking at Unai Emery. I think a foreign manager or a manager with some substance who's achieved things will have to be convinced that they can stay up. No manager of a top level, even the B level, wants to come in and fight a relegation battle. Of course they don't.
No, of course. Which is why I think they needed someone to save them now. And I just can't see them continuing with Eddie Howe in the near future, because they will want to raise the profile of Newcastle. And can you imagine in the summer, if the owners phone, say, Diego Simeone at Atletico Madrid and say, name your price. I mean, they could just do that, couldn't they? They could.
Yeah.
What did really surprise me is that the richest club in the world chose as their number one election for manager, Unai Emery.
Yeah.
And the second choice was Eddie Howe. Okay, a lot of it has to do with what you said, the fact that many people want to come to a team fighting against relegation. But still, I was surprised at both names. Eddie Howe, I think, being English and having done it for Bournemouth, and also he's not really done enough to justify a job at a very top club. So I think that can be explained a lot easier than the approach for Unai Emery.
Yeah, and I think there's other people who are more likely to get the top jobs. Brendan Rodgers' name always swilling around for the top jobs. Now that Patrick Vieira has done an incredible job at Palace, you know, obviously he's got connection with Arsenal and City. So all the top jobs pretty much. And there's obviously, like I said, managers abroad, which would come in. I think, like he said, that the situation with Unai Emery, the reason he didn't come apparently was because he wasn't confident that the board knew what they were doing. Now, obviously not necessarily in those words, but something along those lines. So when you think about that, you obviously think that it's very, they need a director of football quick, who knows, who can talk to football people about football matters, as opposed to just the money, because 99.9% of the top level managers are millionaires. So they're not, unless they're really desperate, they're not going to chase the money.
No, that's right. That's right. And Unai Emery preferred the stability at Villarreal, where he is at present. There's a project that he's trying to build. And I think it would have been very risky for him to just leave behind everything he's been doing up to now. And he is getting results. There are signs that Villarreal are going in the right direction under him.
Yeah.
And to leave all that behind, just to start from scratch, I think would have been, it maybe wouldn't have been very wise.
Yeah, he's won a trophy there already as well, Europa League. So yeah, well, and I don't know if his English has improved, but yeah, I think he's that was always a big thing. Look, I liked Unai Emery, no matter what anybody thought about him. I liked him. I liked what he was trying to do. Listen, if it wasn't for him, Bukayo Saka and Emil Smith Rowe just got an England call up, would not be even in the frame. He brought through the young guys, but he couldn't speak English. And that's always a big problem if you're in England. We could speak the English like you speak, Carlos. He would still be there and we would probably be still fine for like fourth or so. Because I think he had the right idea, just couldn't put it into place.
Yes, he's a very seasoned professional. He knows what he's doing. I'm sometimes a bit surprised at some of the jobs that he's been offered and has got. For instance, at Paris Saint-Germain. I don't think he is an attack-minded or exciting coach, but he's safe and he will make a team progress, even if it's slowly. And maybe for Arsenal, it would have been too slow. That's why, that's another reason maybe why he didn't continue.
Yeah, it was the right decision. It was the right decision. But look, let's move on from Newcastle situation. We'll watch and, you know, like you said, it'd be interesting to see the Brentfords, the Watfords, even the Leeds, maybe in the mix for relegation, because they've, as we talked about over and over again, and you said more than I said, and I didn't believe you, but it's come to pass that the second season blues of all that exhaustion and all that high intensity, it seems to have sunk in. They are not the team they were last year.
It's very difficult with Marcelo Bielsa because, well, I said also that they could have tailed off at the end of the previous season.
Yeah.
And it looked like they were going to at one point, and then they came back. But he is so demanding of players. He asks so much of them that when results are going your way, you can put up with what he asks you to do. But when you're not winning matches, it always happens in football. When you're not winning matches, everything becomes a slog.
Yeah.
But it becomes more of a slog when you are pushed physically to the limit in the way that Bielsa does with his players.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. And we're seeing that come to pass, you know, week in, week out. Like I said, the Leeds games that I've seen is a very different Leeds to the Leeds that we've seen ourselves last season, which was incredible. Some of the games they played were incredible. We talked about the Man City game in particular. That win was out of this world. I doubt that would happen again this season. So anyway.
We must also remember that Bielsa, I think this is his fourth season at Leeds. It's the second season in the Premier, the Premier League.
Yeah.
But I think he was there for two seasons.
Because he didn't make it. They thought they'd go up straight away, but they didn't. And then obviously.
So he's lasted longer than he has at most other places.
Yeah. Maybe this is his retirement job. Do you think he'll go somewhere else now? I don't think so.
I think he will.
I think you think he's still got legs in it.
Okay. I think this is his last season. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And do you think he'll go to another club or country?
He's already been manager of Argentina.
Right.
So he knows what that's about. He went to the 2002 World Cup. Hmm. I think he'll go to another club.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. It'll be interesting.
Probably he'll get a job in Spain, probably.
Yeah. Of course. I should have a doubt. And the last one, I know we stayed on Newcastle a bit, but what do you think about Poch at Newcastle?
It's possible.
Because he's obviously PSG. I mean, we know PSG is one of those jobs where if you're not performing, I mean, they've done okay. But, you know, I think now that Conte is in Tottenham, which is obviously his preferred location, he'll want to come back to England. But if Newcastle have got the money and they get director of football and he feels that, you know, they've got a good plan and a vision, I mean, everyone loves Poch in this country and we love the way he plays football. Surely that he'd be someone they'd look at.
When you consider where he took Tottenham, then you've got to believe that Newcastle will be at least thinking about the possibility of signing Pochettino.
Yeah.
Tottenham went from being outside of the top four consistently to being Champions League participants every season.
Yeah.
Under Poch. They went from being also-rans to challenging for the title.
Yeah.
They got to a Champions League final, for Christ's sake.
Crazy.
I mean, Tottenham Hotspur.
Crazy.
Champions League final. So obviously he's got the credentials.
Oh.
And when Paris Saint-Germain this season do not win the Champions League, which they will not do, then probably he will become available.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he has to be. Like you said, you only have to look at the situation with Tottenham, how they reverse the type and they're trying different managers and it's not working. You know, you've had Jose, Nuno, and in between that, you had that guy, the young guy at the end of the season. I can't remember his name.
Ryan Mason,
who I believe has joined Conte's team. So that's three managers in the doing the same old thing. Nothing's changed. They're nowhere near. They never shot on target on the weekend.
Yes, I wouldn't look too much into that because it's Conte's first match.
Sure.
So things are going to change. But I think the big mistake that Daniel Levy made was hiring Jose Mourinho.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll get to him in a bit. We'll talk about him. But look, we've kind of covered a little bit, but Nuno's obviously gone. That was coming, wasn't it? They were so poor under him. And I don't think it was necessarily his fault. I think the players didn't play for him. I think obviously Kane is desperate to leave and he's doing this striking on the pitch, unfortunately. He's made it crystal clear he wanted to leave. Didn't get it. He's felt he's been betrayed. You know, he made no, you know, bones about that. Everyone's very publicly known. He missed the start of training and he's doing all this strike on the pitch. He's performing like a guy who, well, is going to score, if you're lucky, 10 goals this season when he was golden boot last season. So there's nothing really Nuno could do. There's been some injuries and stuff. What's your thoughts on the matter?
I don't think with Harry Kane that it's a conscious thing. I don't think he's intentionally giving 50%. I think it's just something he cannot control. He didn't want to be there. He's upset. He didn't like probably the appointment of Nuno Espirito Santo.
Mm.
So all of that put together just means when you have a player who doesn't want to be there, where he's disgruntled, he's not going to perform, is he?
No.
And if your top man doesn't perform, then you're in trouble. No. Now, I think, and you touched upon that, the players didn't really play for Nuno. They knew that he was probably, what, the fifth, sixth choice manager?
Yeah.
So even unwittingly, they might not respect the man as much as they would respect someone who the club has gone for, the first choice, and he comes in. And everything seems to be moving forward. But when you've had to hire your fifth, sixth, seventh choice, I'm sure that players were making jokes.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt.
I'm sure that, you know, nothing against Nuno. Honestly, he's a good manager. He did very well at Wolves. He did very well. But he just joined Tottenham at an impossible time and he was in an impossible situation.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. And that, like you said, you're a football manager. That's why I want to hear your take on it. The dress room is key to your success. You're obviously on a run. You're winning at the moment. What would it be like if you were like some, if they didn't respect you? You wouldn't get anything out of them, would you?
No, you don't. You don't. If your players don't respect you, you've got nothing. Unless you've got the full backing of the dressing room, and unless the players believe in what you're saying, what you're doing, then you're completely lost. But at the end of the day, what does condition a coach's situation are results.
Yeah.
Because you can put across the very same message, you can do the same training sessions, which seem to go down well.
Mm.
When you're winning, but if you're losing, your message just loses strength.
No.
Another thing you've got to do is that you've got to make sure that you get on well with your players and you've got to stand up for them. Never blame them.
Mm.
Never blame them, which is something, for instance, our the person we're going to feature on a bit later, Jose Mourinho, has started to do.
Yeah.
Or started to do some years ago, and that has worked against him. You've got to have the players on your side. They've got to feel that you stand by them, believe in them, and will defend them.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because whilst we've got other people to talk about, I do feel like Nuno was a bit surly. He was a bit uncomfortable the way he treated some people. And he didn't say their names, but he made it crystal clear certain people were not. He said, look, I'm honest, if I'm honest. And he wouldn't say names, but he said people weren't performing, weren't delivering what he asked them to do. He made it clear that people had to leave the club. He was quite abrasive in a way that definitely wasn't like that at Wolves. It just seemed like he was frustrated and upset with a lot of players. And it comes down to what you said about the dressing room. And it was a bit uncomfortable at times, wasn't it?
Well, there's something else that we have to remember, and that's that at Wolves, he didn't have any real stars,
except
for one or two Portuguese players who'd done well, Moutinho, for instance. But, you know, he's towards the end of his career, so that makes a difference as well.
Mm.
But at Tottenham, the situation is completely different. There are players who regard themselves as big stars there.
Hmm. Of course.
And the Wolves players were doing a lot of running. Tottenham players, not so much.
Yeah.
And we must remember that the squad, I don't know if they downed tools with Pochettino as well.
Hmm.
But remember that when Poch left, Tottenham were doing badly.
Yeah.
which is why Poch was sacked. But the squad, after the successes and after the Champions League final, the squad seems to not have the stomach for a fight. I think they've lost the desire, and maybe they're spoiled. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, this is just pure speculation, but they didn't perform for Poch after the Champions League final. They didn't perform for Mourinho apart from the first month.
No.
And they haven't performed for Nuno. No. Perhaps what needs to be done is to break up the team and to bring new players in.
Well, that's what they need, isn't it? That's what Conte's been brought. Apparently, he's going to be paid silly money, 20 million a year. He's here. Do you think he can turn around Tottenham's fortunes? I mean, obviously, this season, maybe a big stretch with, because he's obviously got the players he's got. He can only buy a few people in January. Everyone's very resistant these days to giving their best players in January. But do you think, you know, this time next year, he might have got them back on, well, challenging for the top six anyway?
Well, I actually think they'll challenge for the top four this season.
Really? Okay.
I think they're an outside bet for fourth place.
Wow.
With Conte.
Right, okay.
Don't forget, it's very wide open because with Manchester United doing so badly, there's an extra space there that most people believed was going to be nailed on for Man U, and it might not be.
Well, even before you even get there, I mean, Man United is an obvious one. We'll talk about that. Liverpool are stuttering.
Well, it was their first defeat. So
Liverpool have been amazing, but you know, there's no reason why they shouldn't finish in the top four. But that, you know, who knows how things are going to fall out. We know Man City, Chelsea, that's only those two really fighting for the league. But fourth place is definitely up for grabs. Like,
and can West Ham stay up there? West Ham stay up there? So
I think they'll do a Leicester, to be honest. They've done Leicester, you know, obviously Leicester's around, they can't discount them, but look at Leicester. You know, how many times were they in the top four all the way till the end and then dropped out the last
season? When you said they'll do a Leicester, I thought you meant that they were going to win the league.
Oh, no. Not that Leicester. The Brendan Rodgers Leicester. Oh, dear. Not the Ranieri one.
Well, you know that they've got one more point at this stage in the season than Leicester had when they won the league.
Oh, okay.
And Leicester were third after 11 matches, and West Ham are third.
Yeah. I think Chelsea...
That's just an anecdote, you know. That's just interesting, but it doesn't mean they're going to win the league, obviously.
No.
But with West Ham in the top four currently, and with Man U stuttering, surely there's an opportunity for the Arsenals, the Tottenham.
Yeah. Oh, without a shadow of a doubt.
I would even say for Wolves.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's look at the league. Let's look at the table. With the table... it's very tight, basically. Look, after 22, I mean, obviously, we're only 2 points away, but 17, 17, 16, 16, 15, all the way down, Palace of 15, all the way down to 12th. That's gainable. All that's gainable. I think after that, it becomes a bit of a stretch.
Yes, but Palace and Everton won't.
Yeah, Palace and Everton haven't got the legs. But look, like you said, Tottenham, Wolves, Brighton. If we didn't talk about them, United, Arsenal, Liverpool, West Ham, and those two will just fight it out. But it's very open, but that's why people tune in, right?
Yeah, I fancied Brighton last season. You remember that? I used to talk about them then when they were fighting to stay up. But I thought they were doing great, playing really good football. I like Graham Potter, and I thought they lost matches that they should have won last season. But they're still short of a striker. If they could get a goal scorer, if they had a goal scorer, they could make top four.
Oh, they've got huge players. They've got that kind of old school kind of team where everyone is massive, apart from obviously the strikers. But they get like you can see, they've got too many draws at the moment to really make a fist of it. But they're still, they're not losing that much, but you need to be winning games, really. But the height of their players is incredible. I agree with you. They would be very difficult. If they had a striker, he'll be putting in 20 goals, 25 goals. Oh my God. That I'll be as worried about them as I am about West Ham, because that's the team I'm worried about, by the way, as an Arsenal supporter. They're the team which they've had a year where they nearly made top four. Obviously, they made top six, but they're building on it. They're building well. You know, that's why they're third. You know, they're a team that I'll be happy with the draw with, to be honest, if we get to play when we get to play them. But we'll see. But look, we've talked a lot about Tottenham, and we'll see how things pan out. But I'll hold you to that. We must revisit this. Top four for Tottenham. Wow, that's an incredible statement. So let's see how it goes. But look, Villa, this is, I think, out of all the sackings, we've still got one more after that, is the most surprising. So yeah, the most surprising one is got to be Dean Smith. This guy has brought Villa up. He's kept them up. They had a great season last season, albeit, okay, Grealish has gone. And they've had a little bit of a bad run, which is happens to all teams. But what he does, yes, five losses, we appreciate that. But they're nowhere near going to be getting relegated. You know, they've got the strength and depth of the team. Yes, there's been some shockers from some of their main players, Tyrone Mings and whatever else. But, you know, it's only a matter of time before they get into their stride. And yeah, he's been sacked. And what do you make of all that? Do you think that the board has jumped too early here?
Sometimes boards pull the trigger far too early. They panic. They see that Villa are 2 points above the relegation position. And is it four consecutive defeats now?
I think five.
Well, yeah. So it goes to show that they were on three wins and two defeats. Yeah. And now the situation has changed very, very clearly.
Yeah.
One thing that chairman and their boards do not usually do is when they assess a manager's job, they do not weigh it up with the quality of the squad. If you look at the Villa squad,
yeah, we can look at it. Let's have a look at it.
Yeah, let's have a look.
That's the last game.
Should you really expect much more from Dean Smith and his team?
So that's his lineup he started.
Yeah.
You got Watkins, Ollie Watkins, obviously from the Championship, Brentford, and some old hands there, McGinn, and it goes on. Tyrone Mings, we know he's a shocker. He's been a shocker for some time.
El Ghazi's just a journeyman.
Yeah. I mean, there's no stars there. No one is of any
sort. Tuanzebe was, I was going to say, thrown out. I don't want to be cruel, but you know, he wasn't wanted by Man U.
Yeah.
I think he's a good player. But, you know, this is not top notch.
Yeah, Matty Cash, Ashley Young, this is his retirement job, you know, and all these rounds.
So what do they want? Do they really think that getting rid of Dean Smith and bringing someone else in is going to make a huge difference? It might make a bit of a difference because obviously who is your coach does have an influence on your playing style and your results. But you can only take a team so far when you've got a limited squad.
Yeah.
And that's the situation. You see, I don't know if they have a director of football, and if they do, who that is. But rather than get rid of Dean Smith, maybe they should be asking the people in charge of recruitment why their squad is as threadbare as it is.
Yeah, exactly. They haven't spent the money. They've been in the Premiership for a little while. You know, that's the problem, isn't it? Some people are not prepared to make the gamble. I know that, and then you think about the situation. They got all that money for Grealish, £100 million. And they haven't, it feels like that year that Tottenham sold Gareth Bale, they made millions out of that. And then they bought all these kind of mediocre players. I haven't seen anyone of substance come to Aston Villa. They tried to do some ridiculous buys, like tried to get Emil Smith Rowe from Arsenal and all this kind of nonsense. But what have they done with that Grealish money to really strengthen the squad?
Oh, they've done nothing to strengthen the squad. I think most of it is in the bank.
Yeah, exactly.
It's either in the bank or it's gone towards paying off debt. I don't know if they do have debt, but I'm sure that they still had to.
Yeah, of course.
Pay COVID. For some players that they've signed, and you know, various things.
Yeah, and COVID, they would have lost a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, they haven't really built a team to do much better than they're doing now.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, apparently Matty Cash is going to be playing for Poland this week.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter. He's actually posted a picture of himself with holding the Polish, wearing the Polish top, in fact, and pointing to the badge. I don't know what the connection is. Is it his mum?
I think his grandmother. Is it
grandmother? Okay, fine. Well, yeah. If you know, you're definitely not going to get into England, then
yeah,
why not? But look, Dean Smith. Well, let's talk about this. Dean Smith. This is the merry-go-round that is the second. Is one of the top people who's been touted to get the job that this man has vacated, Norwich. So Norwich are looking at Frank Lampard and Dean Smith as their top targets. Now, we know Frank Lampard got sacked from Chelsea, rightly or wrongly. We've talked about that before. But Dean Smith, they see as the man with the credentials and the acumen, obviously, as a great manager, to keep Norwich up. Now, it's a big ask, right? To keep Norwich up, let's be honest. That's the huge thing. But what do you think about Daniel Farke being sacked? I mean, he's a great manager, but it was kind of coming, wasn't it, really, with the way that the Premiership is.
You see, again, this is the board being frivolous because they should ask themselves, do we have a squad which is good enough to stay up? Is it really Daniel Farke's fault? I mean, he's proved that when his squad is good enough, he can be successful, because in the Championship, well, he always wins it.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, they're not good enough for the Premier League, and they go back down. But is that down to the manager? Will a new manager make that much of a difference? You know, these directors, they're not prepared to spend the money. They're not prepared to bring in enough players. And then they demand results of their manager. And I don't think that's fair. I really don't think that's fair. Also, the way they handle the Daniel Farke situation, I think, is terrible, because obviously the decision to sack him was made before the Brentford match.
Yeah.
But it just looks awful to sack the man after a win.
Yeah.
So if they had made up their minds last week or after the previous defeat, they should have sacked him there and then.
Yeah.
And not let him drag on for another week and then run the risk of getting that win and then looking stupid, which is what they've done.
Yeah.
Sack him on the Monday, bring in a caretaker, have someone in for this international break, maybe sign someone by this weekend, get them working. But then again, Norwich will go down anyway. So what was the point?
Yeah.
What was the point of all of this? I'll tell you where I think Dean Smith is going to go.
Where?
I don't think he'll go to Norwich. I think he'll go to Rangers.
Oh, okay. So you think there's going to be a merry-go-round? You think Gerrard's going to go to...
Villa.
Villa, okay. So straight swap out. Okay.
Yeah.
That's definitely possible. There's a lot of talk about that Steven Gerrard wants a second title, but I think he'll want to come back to Premiership. His family's still in Liverpool, so he's obviously having to travel to Scotland a lot, and his kids obviously getting older, so I'm sure he'll want to be around them.
He's got nothing to prove at Rangers. He's got nothing to prove.
Exactly, he's won the title. He's reversed them completely from being when they checked the league below. He brought them back in, and he's won the league. So what else is there to do? So look,
had a good run in Europe last season.
Yeah, they did. So yeah, I think he should move, but who knows what he's thinking. We'll find out soon enough at the end of the international break. But I agree with you. Norwich have never stayed in the Premier League more than one season. And they've just reversed the type. There's no way they've got the team to be a billion-dollar team, which clearly is going to pump some money in January. Burnley, who are old hands at this. Watford will probably join them. Villa will definitely stay up. So then you're looking at teams which, you know, you have to actually get more than, you know, 10 points first of all. You have to win some games. You're looking at teams which maybe Brentford, Leeds might be in there, but these teams are not going to finish below Norwich, no chance. I think Norwich, if they're lucky, they'll win 2-3 more games this season, if they're lucky. But we'll see what happens. But Daniel Farke, look, we wish him all the best, right? He's done a great job, and look, we'll see what happens with him. Let's see how the merry-go-round goes. But let's talk about, we talked about all the guys who've been sacked. I think we've covered them all. Let's talk about the people who've somehow dodged the bullet. How is this guy still in a job? Can someone explain to me how you get absolutely mullered? People walking around, people missing the ball. Two of the cheapest goals you'll ever see. And yet somehow this guy, with all respect to Ole, is still in a job, because it perplexes me. This guy's run has been so poor, and he's got the world-class players, changes his formation at every single whim, and allowed people to take liberties. And yet he's still in a job. The board is still comfortable with him. Can someone explain to me? Explain to me, Carlos, because I'm perplexed.
Well, I think that the fact that he is a hero from the time that he was a player,
of course,
has given him a lot of credit. But have a look at Chelsea. They had an even bigger hero.
Yeah.
Frank Lampard. And they sacked him.
The record goal scorer.
Yeah.
Lampard is a legend. He's won everything with them. And he's scored more goals than anyone else in Chelsea.
And they didn't bat an eyelid.
They just threw him away.
They threw him away. But Man U are reluctant to do so. And they could pay the penalty, because they could miss out on the Champions League next season.
Not without a shadow of a doubt.
Now, what I think has been evident over the last few weeks is that Solskjaer is not the manager you want when the situation becomes tense. Mm. And when things are stretched to the limit. Mm. Because deep down, I think he's panicking.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt.
I think he's panicking because, as you said, he's making changes. It changes in his tactics, in his first 11. Yeah. And he's letting players get away with murder.
Yeah.
Too many players not performing. Now, at least he got rid of Pogba.
Yeah.
Which I think was a first and important step to take. But there are other players who I think are underperforming and are not putting in a shift.
Hmm. Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, the formation changes are over and over again. And looking at the team, some people just need to be dealt with. The Fred situation is horrible. I just don't get how he gets a game every single time. Wan-Bissaka has seemed to have picked up a bit. That by his situation, he's completely lost confidence. And that's of Ole's doing, just like with Van der Beek. We've talked, you know, everyone's talking about Van der Beek's situation. But if you don't play a guy and then you suddenly plonk him in, of course he's not going to play well. Of course he's going to struggle. You put him in one of the biggest games of the year for you guys at home. And you expect him to be brilliant. He's not going to be brilliant. McTominay, we like him. Fernandes, we've talked a lot about him, how he's underperforming with Ronaldo in the team. Obviously, we talked about off-air, about other pundits talking about the fact that without Cavani in the team, there's no real drive. Unfortunately, Cavani was injured. But it's just painful to see how disorganized they are. And every 5 minutes, the formation changed. So here it's 3-5-2. And, you know, that obviously didn't work. It's the Atalanta game was very bizarre as well, because the Atalanta game, if I can get to it, was Atalanta. We know their situation, right? They leak goals all day long. I don't know why. I don't know if the full ins and outs about their situation. But they're 3-5-2-4, the game against Man City. 3-4-2-1 against Atalanta. Why are you not sticking to a formation and just making sure that you have the players that you want in? I don't get it. I'm very confused why, how you can keep changing formation and for your players to actually get it.
As far as I'm concerned, it shouldn't be a problem to change your formation. Because I think that every team should be able to play at least two different formations and comfortably slip into one or the other during a season. I don't think a team should be limited to one single formation. You have to have your main one, but they should be comfortable in playing in a different formation.
Yeah.
The issue here is, if you see the lineup against Manchester City, it's obvious by looking at the 11 he sent out that he was terrified. He was terrified of Manchester City.
Yeah.
It's a 3-5-2. But look at this. You've got your three central defenders. Mm. You've got your two wing backs who are full backs. They're defenders.
Mm.
And then you've got, of the remaining three in midfield, you've got two defensive midfielders.
Yeah.
So you're talking about seven defensive players.
Mm.
And then you've got Greenwood and Ronaldo and Bruno Fernandes, who should be linking between midfield and the attack.
Mm.
But if you consider as well that of the few attacking players, two attacking players, one creative midfielder, Greenwood is not much of a runner.
No.
He normally runs when he has the ball.
Mm.
And Ronaldo is even 10 times more guilty of that than Greenwood.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the prospects weren't good from the start, were they?
No. I mean, look, the Ole situation will rumble on. And even now you go on the channels and they're still talking about him. And why, basically, everyone's perplexed why he's still got a job. Do you think he'll last to the end of the season?
You know, in normal circumstances, I would say no. Because any Man U manager with not just the defeats, but also the manner in which the team has been defeated would have gone a long time ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got more lives than a cat, hasn't he? And even though he seems to be running out, there still might be enough lives left for him to reach the end of the season. Mm. It shouldn't happen, because I don't think Man U will improve that much. So it shouldn't happen. He should be on his way fairly soon.
Mm.
But they haven't made the decision yet. If they haven't made it before the international break, it means they're not going to make it now. Mm. They're going to give him a few more games. And then, do you really want to change your manager in the middle of the Christmas program?
Yeah.
So, you know, he might make it into the new year. And once that happens, who knows? You know, you win a couple of matches and then you get extra credit. Who knows?
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, the funny thing, I'm usually quite robust about this guy getting sacked or this guy or that guy. But I agree with you. I think even listening to some of the most ardent pundits who are former players for the team, no matter what happens with the situation of Ole and the team and how bad they are still backing him. And they're saying he needs time. And I think that their reference point, funnily enough, ironically, is Mikel Arteta, is the fact that he was given time. He should have been sacked, let's be honest. He's had a bad run at the end of last season, bad run at the start of this season, even after all the buys, but he stuck with his guns, he stuck with his players, and obviously Arsenal have turned it around. Obviously, they're one game away from obviously falling apart again. But the fact of the matter is that he's turned it completely around. And the fact of the matter was that Ole got them second last year. They're obviously not going to get second this year. But I think he will make it till summer. I think he will. And I think if they get Champions League, I think he'll stay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very possibly.
It's a sensitive issue. You can't just sack a guy who's a legend. You know, Mikel Arteta, if I think about Arsenal now, if Patrick Vieira got the job, or Thierry Henry, but more likely Patrick Vieira, if he leaves Palace and Mikel Arteta takes the City job when Pep leaves, there's no way they will sack Patrick Vieira. They'll never do a Chelsea. They would never sack Patrick Vieira without having a full season. Never. It's impossible.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And that would be to Arsenal's credit, in the same way as you've got to consider that it's to Man U's credit that they are being steadfast and that they're being patient, because very often we criticize clubs for making rash decisions, but acting too quickly and not giving managers enough time. It's true that Ole's been in the job for a while now, but at the same time, you've got to think this is the man who joined United when they were mid-table, more or less.
Yeah, yeah, and, that's terrible.
And he took them to second place. So he can't be the disaster that some people are claiming that he is.
Yeah.
I think he's got something, and he's probably able to turn things around, but there are some underlying issues there that until they're addressed, I don't think Ole or anyone else will be able to get United on the right track.
Yeah, I mean, they were at one point even fine for the title, but like you said, some fundamental things need to change. But look, we've talked in length about them, the players, the formation, the rest of it. How does he turn it around? That's my final question on the Ole situation. Does he need someone of experience coming in to help him? Does he need a change of the staff person? What does he need? Does he need Alex Ferguson coming in and going through? What does he need to turn around? Because he clearly can't do it on his own.
Well, as I said, there are many aspects that need to be addressed. And I would mention maybe a couple. I would say last season, you've got to look at what has changed from last season to this season.
Yeah.
In order to get an idea of why things have deteriorated. Now, last season, Henderson was playing in goal.
Yeah.
People will look at some of the saves that De Gea made in the first half against Manchester City. I think except for one, which was good, all of the others were saves he had to make. If he hadn't made them, there would have been terrible goalkeeping mistakes. But the fact is, when you have a goalkeeper who's stuck to his goal line, how many times a match does the ball flash across the six-yard box? People are looking at Maguire and the other centre halves and saying, you know, they're doing badly. They're not doing their job. They're off form. But when you have a goalkeeper who doesn't do what he should be doing, that makes their centre halves lose confidence. It drags them out of position as well, because they have to go into the six-yard box to clear balls that should be the goalkeeper's. When you have a goalkeeper who often makes a save that just gives the opposing forward a second bite at the cherry, again, the defenders lose confidence. So they're worried not only about what's going on in front of them, they're worried about what's going on behind them. So when you look at Manchester United conceding so many goals and the defense looking so bad, you've got to see where everything starts. And I think it starts with the goalkeeper.
Oh, I mean, that second goal, it beggars belief the way that I mean, you could not even talk about Shaw. It was horrible.
The second goal against Manchester City.
Yeah.
The first goal for Atalanta.
Yeah.
Two consecutive games. One of the goals against Villarreal in the Champions League. So, the list is endless. And it's not just the gross goalkeeping errors.
Mm.
It's the smaller things that maybe people don't notice that I think are making Manchester United a very poor defensive team.
Yeah, yeah. And they always say, I mean, you're the manager, they always say you have to build from the back, right? You have to start with a great goalkeeper. That's, I mean, for Arsenal, going back to my team, it's made a huge difference having the goalkeeper who we've got confidence in. He's 100% better than Leno. There's a lot of question marks about him, but he's been so fantastic. And it's given those guys in front of him confidence. Fair enough, Ben White's new, but Gabriel seems like a completely different player to what he was. Obviously, we've got some new players at the back as well. Tommy and Tavares is covering for Tierney, but there's a confidence there. And that's why we're getting clean sheets, because Ramsdale is vocal. He gets angry. He expects a lot from his people in front of him. And that connection is what makes a great team. Like you said, from what I saw about Maguire, Shaw, Wan-Bissaka, all the rest of it, even Lindelof, they all just seem, like you said, a bit jittery. And that's what happened with the goal, the second goal. Shaw didn't know what to do. He thought, oh, he's covering for it. Oh, should I? Oh no, it's gone in. And De Gea didn't shout. You see, look at De Gea's face. He didn't shout, he didn't scream. He just kind of went there and then it bounced underneath.
And then he turned his body out of the way of the ball. Something he does very often.
Why is he not screaming? Mine!
Instead of going out to the ball, you know, facing the ball, as the ball comes towards him, he turns to his side.
Yeah.
He makes himself smaller.
It's crazy.
What you're saying about Arsenal is correct. You know, they've improved defensively. But what's the point of having a goalkeeper who makes a couple of flashy saves and then throws the ball into his own net? I'm exaggerating. I'm exaggerating when I say throws the ball into his net.
Might as well for the second goal. That was ridiculous.
There's no point in that. You haven't gained anything. You've still lost something. So that for me is one of the issues that needs to be addressed. And it's no coincidence that last season Henderson was playing towards the tail end of the season, the second half of the season, basically.
It's a fair point. But look, we'll see how it all falls into place. But we've predicted Ole will stay. I'd love to hear people's thoughts on that. So look, let's talk about someone else who potentially should be sacked, but I don't know how he continues to be on our airwaves and in charge of a team. So here we've got Jose Mourinho after a draw. Roma, he's moved to Roma after being sacked by Tottenham. And this is him chatting to a reporter. Remember, he's being interviewed here.
He has to explain, but they don't speak.
Let's start again.
Today, boss. But how do you explain the game today here in Stadio Olimpico?
Look, the referee has to explain, but they don't speak.
What did the referee do wrong?
Did you watch the game?
Yes, of course, but I want it from you. You see it from your point of view.
You tell.
Now tell me. I want to hear it from the Roma coach.
Now you tell.
Let's stop there for a minute. I don't get it. First of all, he said speak to the referee. Then he's saying you tell. So I can't get my head how someone can be so negative and very horrible to this is a basic interview, right? After a draw, he didn't even lose the game. And he's been extremely abrasive and extremely, well, disrespectful, I think, to the reporter. What's your thoughts on this bit? We'll carry on after your thoughts.
Well, I think that not just Mourinho, but other managers sometimes fail to understand what an interview is about. An interview is about the journalist asking the coach or the player or the interviewee the questions, not the other way around. And yet, a lot of coaches use that tactic when they become tense, when they're irritated, they insist on the journalist saying what they want him to say. Now, the journalist doesn't have to give an opinion. Hmm. He's not there to give an opinion. Hmm. If he wants, the journalist can be on a panel, he can be a pundit, he can write an article, and that's where he gives an opinion. But when he's interviewing someone, the whole point of the interview is that the interviewee has to do the talking.
Exactly. It is just horrible. And then it continues.
You mean there should be penalties?
Come on. You know it, no?
No, you mean it, you should be penalties.
And you?
Which situation did you see should be penalties? I want to hear that from the Roman coach. I'm not a normal TV reporter.
No, tell what you saw.
So the great thing about this is the guy gets on to Jose and said, look, you're the manager, I'm a TV reporter. And yet, Mourinho is non-stop here. And is this just deflection? Is this the fact that he doesn't want to take any responsibility for the mediocrity that he's created at Roma? What do you think?
I think it's arrogance, because he doesn't want to accept the fact that the team he has coached has not been up to standard.
Mm.
And therefore, Mourinho, the same as other coaches, Klopp is just as guilty.
Mm.
Whenever the game goes against him, whenever results go against him, it's always a referee's fault.
Oh, the Klopp on the weekend was horrible. Go on anyway, sorry.
He was embarrassing. Klopp was embarrassing. But so it's not just what he did and said over the weekend. Just look at any post-match interview. Every single time Liverpool lose.
Yeah.
You see, Klopp likes to give an image of a pleasant, smiley man.
Mm.
But he can do that because Liverpool win more often than they lose.
Yeah.
Or even draw. When they win, you know, he's all laughs, isn't he? He's great. But for me, that is pure hypocrisy, because you see the real Klopp when Liverpool lose, not when Liverpool win.
Yeah.
And you could say the same about Mourinho. With Mourinho, I think it's slightly different, because I think it's more about pride with Mourinho.
Mm.
It's more about pride. And because he's been so successful,
mm.
He's now in a period of his career where things are not going his way. He's not winning anything.
No.
Not only is he not winning anything, he's started to get the sack from different places.
Yeah, good point.
And the press are beginning to question his methods. Supporters are questioning his methods. So he's suddenly gone from being all-conquering to being the complete opposite. Yeah. And I think that is what psychologically he's not been able to assimilate and accept. And for that reason, I think he has these outbursts.
Yeah, it's, I agree. It's, and we might as well watch the rest of it. And this is in the Europa Conference League. That's how bad it was. So this is where he's at now. Champions League to Europa Conference League. That says it all, eh? So let's have a look at the rest of it.
I couldn't see. I was sitting so far away. So you have
not,
to tell me.
Not even on the screen. You didn't watch it after the game.
So you meant the referee took it away today?
Of course.
And what about Bodeglimt today? Was that any surprise how they come today?
They are a good team. They have good players. They had 2 shots. They scored 2 goals. The result was 2-2. We had 2 penalties. We had 4 or 5 more chances to score. That's the game.
That's the... it just shows really what he's about. And we, you know, I've got a picture of obviously being sent off, and we've talked about it before, about him trying to coach from like being sent off. I mean, surely it's time for him to go country now. It's time to go. And obviously we've talked about the fact that Portugal wouldn't even take him up the way he is, the toxic nature of him at the moment. The anger in his soul, it just seems that he's just not someone you really want to be around or you would use to manage anybody at the moment.
No, that's right. I just cannot imagine now, after he leaves Roma, which sooner or later he will,
Yeah.
I cannot imagine any chairman wanting to gamble on him. Why would anyone now hire Jose Mourinho?
Hmm.
Which is sad. It's very sad. But I think he has contributed towards that by not being able to handle different situations to the ones that he's experienced in the past. He at Tottenham should have known that he wasn't going to win things. So he should have simply worked towards having a solid side to be around top four. And also, he often adopts such defensive tactics with teams or clubs that traditionally have not done that.
Yeah, exactly.
Tottenham have never been a defensive side.
No.
And we saw them counter-attacking to good effect early in the season. And then we just saw them parking the bus. Man United parked the bus with Jose Mourinho. I saw a couple of matches of Roma's, and again, they had 11 players behind the ball. Surely he's got to realize that it's not working. All you have to do is look at the results. And if the results are going against you, you change something. You can't keep doing the same thing over and over again when it's not working. Yeah. But if you convince yourself that it's not working because of the referee, then you can continue along the same line. Because at the same time, you're convincing yourself that it's not your fault, it's not your team's fault, it's not your tactics, it's not your game plan, it's the referee.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's a good point. And it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out with Mr. Mourinho. We've seen him a lot, obviously, in the English Premier League, and he's, you know, managed Chelsea twice, Manchester United and Tottenham, and he's had a good run. He's won a lot in everywhere he's gone. But, you know, like you said, it's becoming a situation where, well, it's not our problem anymore in England. So we'll just watch it from afar.
Maybe it will become your problem in England again soon after he leaves Roma.
Yeah, well.
Could go to Watford with Italian connections.
Yeah, maybe. What about Newcastle? What do you think about him going to Newcastle?
No, I can't see that happening.
Anything's possible.
If they did that, it would show that they know, the owners, nothing about football, and that they would be signing a name, blast from the past, rather than someone who could do something for them now.
We'll see how that all plays out. It'll be interesting to see what happens, really, with Jose Mourinho and his journey, as he probably is in his last season with Roma. I can't see them taking him, carrying on with him, unless they don't want to do a big payoff or something like that. But we'll see what happens. But look, thank you very much. That's I think we've covered quite a lot of people there. So thank you, Carson. It's been a pleasure talking about all the managers who have been sacked and who should be sacked. So it's been absolutely fantastic. So look, thank you so much.
Great fun. Mac. And as always, it's a great pleasure to be here with you and having a chat and enjoying ourselves talking about the sport we love.
Yeah, it's unagreed, 100%. It's lovely. And look, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the matter on all these managers as well. Leave your comments. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And thank you for watching the Football Fan Show.